Hi, this is Joe Van Wee, your host of All Better. I had a few announcements. If you're interested in subscriber content, which we're about to launch, this would be STEP workshops, cognitive behavioral therapy tools, and mindfulness practices that are approachable and can be very useful in reducing anxiety, rumination, and depression. Please send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And if you like the episodes that you've been hearing very much, please stop by Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and a small review. This helps us stay relevant in the field of content and helping people and their families with substance use disorder. Thank you. Hello, and thanks again for listening to another episode of All Better. I'm your host, Joe Van Wee. Today's guest is my friend, Senator John Kane. Senator Kane is a plumber and a local labor leader who has spent his life fighting for working people and working families. He's personally battled through many of the challenges that are facing Pennsylvanians today. After graduating high school in Delaware County, Kane joined Plumbers Local 690, the union he represented as a business manager for 5 terms. Kane led his union through the Great Recession, which put nearly 500 members out of work. As members struggled with mental health issues and substance use disorder, Kane provided strong, steady leadership and worked to deliver a recovery that brought his local back stronger than ever. Kane's union benefits also helped him through his own personal struggles. At the age of 22, Kane sought treatment for alcohol addiction. His union benefits allowed him the treatment he needed. Now he proudly has 37 years of sobriety. 2015, Kane was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. Thanks to his union healthcare, and the incredible doctors, nurses, and hospital staff, Kane has been cancer-free for 6 years. He knows that his experience isn't unique, and he's ready to fight for affordable healthcare for all Pennsylvanians. Kane lives in Birmingham with his wife, Lori. He sits on a board of the Living Grin Foundation, which provides addiction treatment across southeastern PA. Let's meet the senator.
So, and it's only a couple of minutes away. Let me just double check.
3 o'clock. I'll have you out by before 3. Senator, thank you for coming on today.
Bye.
Been very excited to talk to you. I've been an admirer of your advocacy since you've been in the state senate for addicts and people of recovery, and the way you frame addiction is so easily accessible and understandable, and to see it from your position is really refreshing, because that wasn't always the case the last 100 years.
Right. Well, you know, it's been a while. I've been in recovery for such a long time, you know, and when I'm around people that are in recovery, it brings me right back home, man. Like, I know what it's like to struggle. I know all those feelings that everybody's going through, you know, and it gets emotional because, you know, the further I get away from it, you know, I'm with other people and, you know, in politics and stuff like that. You don't think about the people that are struggling until you see it firsthand, whether it's going to a meeting, you know, whether it's being around a lot of people, you know, that have been through the opioid epidemic, you know, or when it comes to suicide because of, you know, I look at it as though it's suicide. A lot of times they get on heroin and next, you know, it's fentanyl. And then before you know it, they're done. But it breaks my heart to see, you know, people that are going through this like I did. And, you know, it's a reminder.
Just and it's something for that a little I'll bit never on forget. That point. How close is your district to Kensington?
I'd say it's probably about a good 45 minutes to an hour away. when I, and Kensington Avenue, I mean, it's, you know, in the city of Philadelphia there, I spent many a times down there, not only because we did a lot of good down there to help out Rock Ministries, which caters to a lot of the young children down there. It's a boxing club, and, you know, boxing is a big sport in the Philadelphia area. And I think every kid that grows up in my neck of the woods gives it a shot. And, you know, Buddy Osborne, I honestly believe the guy is like a walking saint for what he does down there to provide, you know, a gym, training. And then we opened up a school for kids to get up there at nighttime, you know, because they don't have access to a safe community, you know, where they can go to a place like that. And, you know, they have dinners and lunches served for people down there. And that's right in the heart of Kensington Avenue. But Kensington Avenue was probably about 25 minutes away from my union hall. And, you know, coming from, you know, running a union and having members that were addicted to drugs and getting phone calls from family members like, hey, listen, Pat's right down there right now. Can you do me a favor? Can you send a couple guys to go down and get them? And, you know, we wouldn't have a problem doing something like that. But Kensington Avenue is right down. Wow. Been there many a time.
Well, there's a lot there. Asking someone to get sober in a neighborhood where basic needs aren't being met isn't the same as someone who, you know, just lost a job selling insurance. And I think compassion lets you see that empathy. And your friend was just on here, Brian Ettis, and we had a large discussion about we got to really unpack the idea of what you, not only unions and labor organizations do for democracy and how they keep them healthy, but how this brotherhood is evolved in the last even 30 years in approaching mental health, addiction, especially with seasonal work and the unemployment being a part of that cycle and what can happen in those periods. But I thought maybe just real quick for a summary, let's start with your story of where did it all begin?
The good old days. All right. Well, I started my drinking career, I guess we could say, probably in high school. I wasn't an athlete. I wasn't the smartest kid in school. In fact, I was undersized. I was pretty dumb. I wasn't a ladies' man. And when I found alcohol, it was everything I ever wanted to be. You know, it made me that person that I wanted to be. I was charming. I had a sense of humor. I was likable. I was a tough guy all of a sudden. You know, I wasn't afraid to go at it when I got a couple of beers in me. And then all of a sudden, what ended up happening over years is what I found out was I was getting into trouble. And every time I got into trouble, it was linked to drinking or drugs. Every time. You know, and then what ended up happening, graduated, we used to go do the keg parties, and then, you know, we're hanging on the corners, and then we went from the corners to the cars, from the cars to the bars. And then before you know it, you know, you're getting yourself into trouble, you know, whether it was jealousy. And that was probably the eye opener for me, because I was never a jealous person. I mean, I wish I was a better athlete, stuff like that, or I wish I was smarter. But the jealousy started acting up with me, which something I never saw before, you know. Drinking in a bar and, you know, you're with your girlfriend and somebody's over there talking to her and, you know, what's going on? And I started to become angry. And then, you start going from the drinking, and that was the beginning. That was my gateway, was drinking. You know, then, you know, I always wanted to keep the drinking going. You know, I wanted to drink myself sober so I could continue to drink. And then back in the day, we were doing speed. And, you know, then I got introduced to Quaaludes and angel dust. And I was just off the charts with certain things. And Quaaludes was the worst thing in the world because it was knocking me out. And I was, you know, really going into what I like to say.
What decade is this, Senator? Is it the 70s? Are we talking about that? The 80s?
This was the 70s going into the 80s. Yeah, this, I would say probably, I was 20 years old and I was a full-blown drunk. You know, it was like I had to get to the bar. You know, I couldn't hold the job. And when I did work, I was taking shit off the job and stealing. And, you know, I was a plumber, so copper was worth about, I don't know, close to a dollar a pound. You're walking out with a bag about 100 pounds of copper. That was $100. That was a lot of money. It was a good weekend. You know, and then started getting involved in cocaine. I always looked at, there was nothing. I was afraid of a needle. Scared to death of acid. Scared to death of heroin. To me, they were the drug addicts. Little did I know, I was worse than half them guys. They only did a little bit of heroin and stuff like that. Me, a good night for me was getting drunk and, of course, getting locked up. That was a perfect night for me. If I didn't get drunk, locked up, trouble with the cops, into a fist fight, you know, getting thrown out of a bar, that to me,
yeah,
that was an accomplishment for me.
I love how you draw the line at acid. That's a bridge too far. What do you think it was? Was it the store?
I hung on a corner, and the guys that hung up over at the bowling alley, they were all the heroin addicts and the acid guys. And, you know, guys would be talking about, you know, I don't know, just, you know, acid and psychedelic and stuff like that. That was way, way, way out of my league.
That's like the Beatles versus Elvis people. Yeah, my dad, I was just getting into kind of psychedelic culture when I was a teenager, t-shirts, loved the, is starting to listen to the Dead. And my father caught me with a Dead t-shirt on.
Yeah.
And he ripped it right off me. I'm like, what are you doing? I just bought this t-shirt. He goes, I know guys that are in diapers because of that band. That was his line.
Wow. Well, that was like the Rolling Stones with the tongue hanging out. Because if you think about it, back when I was growing up, and you look like you're a little younger than me, but you'll probably remember, you know, you used to have, I guess it was the patches and stuff like that on the back of the jackets or right on the jeans and stuff like that. The purple lights and the posters up at nighttime in your room. And, you know, and that was when I grew up. But I was scared to death of having a flashback. That was like, oh, hell no. I don't need that. I got a bad enough problem right here. But I was a violent type of guy. I mean, I'm probably the same size as I was. I lost a lot of weight. And, you know, some of my story goes into about having cancer and stuff like that. I sound nasally, but that's all due because of cancer. But, you know, I'm not the weight that I used to be, where I was 235, you know, I'm about 165 pounds now. And when I was drinking back in those days, I was a good middleweight fighter. I used to do a lot of sparring and stuff like that. So I didn't mind throwing with people. And then I look at a bigger guy and it's like, I got nothing to lose here. He does, you know. So, you know, getting drunk, it just brought me to that level where I was always looking for a fight. Always looking for a fight. And I like to joke, this nose didn't get this way from backing up. And sure, I probably should have backed up. Yeah. In fact, I probably should have ran. Because I don't win too many fights. Back up, I'm wondering if I ever did.
I won a lot in grade school, but the first time I got knocked out was your colleague there. Marty Flynn knocked me out in high school.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Joe Van Wyam, the host of All Better, but I'm also the CEO of Fellowship House. And at Fellowship House, we believe long-term recovery requires a personality change as well as a clinical intervention. These ideas can take several months to achieve. Our philosophy is to provide a safe, therapeutic, and exceedingly active environment for patients to achieve these personality changes and find joy in the fellowship of recovery, which will allow for long-term sobriety. We believe that recovery extends beyond treatment and peer-to-peer communities into real life. In Fellowship House, we provide a design for living that focuses on education and service. We have strong relationships with the 12 universities and vocational schools in the area and ensure that our fellows pursue their personal goals while entering sobriety. We also stress independence and responsibility, making sure each individual is financially solid and self, and helping to make their community a better place. As a treatment center, Fellowship House offers both residential and outpatient treatment services to individuals and families affected by addiction and alcoholism. We're a DDAP licensed provider of general outpatient, intensive outpatient, and partial hospitalization programming, as well as a level of care assessments. If you want to find out more information about Fellowship House, please visit fellowshiphouses.com.
Marty probably couldn't even lay a glove on me. I'm much better of a fighter than he is.
So this is the summary, you know, of youth, you know, the way the culture around you, how you cope, how you connect and bond with, say, alcohol, amphetamines, and that it's meeting a need that you couldn't really provide, or the idea of image, your self-image, who you think you are, doesn't really kind of gel until you're under the influence of these. Even today, do you surprise not only constituents, or sometimes when you're on panels or advocating for addiction and recovery, means to recovery, do people seem surprised just because of the title, the stature, that what they hear coming from your mouth about addiction? Do you see any surprises out there?
There are, that I'm so open about, you know, my recovery and my story.
And
it's emotional, you know, and I let them know that I was a drunk. I was a bad kid, you know, and I enjoy being around people that are like me, just to show them, like, listen, man, I know it gets dark, and I talk about suicide, and I talk about it all. I didn't want to live. I hated the person I was, or I was becoming. And I knew deep down in my heart, I was a good guy. But just my actions weren't showing it. And, you know, somebody just pulled me off. And all it took was one person to pull me off to the side and have a heart-to-heart talk with me during a coffee break. Like, listen, dude, I'm reading about in the paper again. What the hell happened to you, man? You got into a freaking high-speed chase on a motorcycle with the cops, and you got a DUI and looting and, you know, eluding the police. And you got a drinking problem, don't you see it? And I knew I probably did, but I would prove to people, look, I don't have a drinking problem. Look, I haven't drank in a month. And that was me, my mental thinking, like, I could stop at any time. But when I went back, man, if I didn't get drunk and into a fight, I didn't accomplish a good load. And that's, you know, that's what ended up, the moment of clarity. Even though this guy had talked to me, didn't mean I was going to get straight, and I knew it. But around that same time, when the guy had the conversation, who was in AA, he was a steward on my job, Billy Deeney, he passed away, and I can use his name because he always allowed me to use his name. Well, I ended up, I got on a load down in Philadelphia after I had been drinking all night, and I decided I had got to get to school. I didn't have a license. A buddy of mine promised me a ride. We go down to Philadelphia. It got me closer to my school for my apprenticeship program, and I blacked out. We both blacked out. In fact, I think we were given what they so-called Mickeys or something like that. I had a busted head. I ended up with a whole bunch of tickets in my pockets for public drunkenness, disorderly conduct. I can't even tell you it's freaking half the stuff that I had that night. I had peppers in my pockets, and we were probably out trying peppers? To get something to eat. I don't know. My wallet was stolen. Peppers, hot peppers. You know, I guess we were at a place trying to get a homie. I don't know. I probably stole them. I was a thief. It was just, you know, I had blood all over me, and I was down on Front Street, and I wake up in my buddy's car, and he doesn't have his keys to his car. He doesn't have his wallet, so somebody rolled this. And I remember walking home, seeing people. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning, and seeing, like, you know, it was like the morning. People are getting up, and they're going to work and traffic, and I'm walking home, and I'm like, something wrong, man. This is life. This is what life's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be going to work. I'm supposed to be getting up. I'm not supposed to be drunk and beat up. You know, this. There's something. I didn't like this person that I had just became. And that's when I actually went. Right after that, I'm going to say that was probably a Thursday or a Friday. Sunday, I ended up in another drunken fist fight where I got my ass handed to me again. And that Monday, I decided I'm going to go to AA and give it a shot. And I was glad that I did, because I ended up that Monday, I didn't go, but that Tuesday there was a meeting near my house, and I rode my bike because I didn't have a car. I had to ride a bike, and you're looking at a 22-year-old kid, you know, almost 23, that doesn't have a driver's license, don't even have a vehicle, don't have a pot to piss in. And I was able to, you know, go to that meeting that night and, you know, listening to what people were telling me what to do. And it was the simplest things in the world. I'm not a smart guy, but I'm a blue collar type of guy. Make it basic and make it simple. And I can take that in. And a guy grabbed me to the side and goes, 90 meetings in 90 days. Are you able to do that? And it sounded like a lot. And he goes, it's only one meeting a day. I was laying off. I could do that. So I ended up, I did that. And in the construction industry, we look at it as a strong foundation is able to build, you know, a high-rise building. And I kept it simple like that. Like, I need a good, strong foundation. And I did. I was young. I had all these old timers in the AA meeting. Can't talk about drugs. Stop. You got to stop right there. About sure. Even though alcohol was my drug of choice, you know, but it's hard for a guy like me not to talk about it. So I used to get reprimanded. Then I used to go to the AA meetings, which was perfect because I was meeting a lot younger people at the time. And I got involved. You know, I started going to meetings and, you know, we had a softball team. You know, it was a bunch of young guys and the old timers, they were playing chess and pinochle and I couldn't give a shit, you know. I was more or less like hanging out. And even though people, places and things, I was told, and some of the younger guys like John, you could be anything that you want to be. Don't let that hold you back. Don't believe what some of these old times are telling you, that you can't continue to do what you do because there's alcohol involved in it. You'll be okay. Just remember, you can't have that first drink. Just remember that. And it was so true. I never lapsed. I never fell off the wagon. I always stung in there. And even in the day, I still think of a drink. My wife don't drink, or she drinks, but I go and I take her out and I see people drinking. Does it bother me? Yeah, it bothers me that I can't drink. But I'm all right when it goes right in my hand, it comes right out. I move on. But I always try to advocate to people. I was at the bottom of the barrel, and I'm on that pink cloud that we like to talk about, but it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. It's still not easy for a guy like me. You'd like to think it was. Even when I was a plumber, I quit 1983, my drinking, October the 3rd. But we can go into 1987 when I met my wife. 1989, 1990, 1991. In those 3 years, I only worked 6 months. I was out of work, out of unemployment, out of money. And I felt less of a man like I did back in my drinking days. But the only thing I did differently this time was I didn't drink. I picked up side work. I ended up delivering flowers. You know, I worked in a bowling alley. I caddied when I could. I did whatever I had to do until times got picked up and I was able to do a little bit more side work. And things got better. And then somebody gave me a second chance in my union. I was a bad kid. They knew I didn't go to work and stuff like that. Nobody wanted to give me a chance because I ruined my reputation. And then what ended up happening, the guy that was running my union offered me a position in my union as the political action committee. And that got me involved in politics because he knew I was a good guy. And he knew that I was trying to change my life for the better. And if it wasn't for my good friend, Eddie Keenan, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I know that. He's the guy that turned over after all those years working underneath them, turned around and said, "You're going to take over this union." Wow. You know, you think of a snot-nosed kid growing up that hung up on a corner is all of a sudden now going to be a labor leader in the city of Philadelphia, one of the strongest labor towns, cities in the entire nation. Man, what a goal. And then when it ended up happening, that was in 2007. I was on cloud nine. I had full employment. We had money in our local. 2008, just like that, drop of a dime. Unemployment, a recession that we've never seen before. I saw my members run out of unemployment, coming in begging for a job, and I had nothing. From 2010 to 2012, my members were running out of unemployment. I had 10 members of mine commit suicide. From 2007 to 2020, 22 of my members overdosed and died because of the overdose epidemic. I never in a million years thought I was going to have to take on something like this. Never in a million years would I have ever thought something like that was going to happen to me. That was a huge weight on these shoulders, man. But I thank people in recovery that kept myself open-minded and I was able to think with clear clarity, knowing that I got to help this family. What can I do to help these people? So I advocate for people that are in addiction, for people that are dying because of, when I think of people that are depressed, dealing with anxiety. I've been there, man. And when I get to Harrisburg, I'm able to talk about these types of things because I live it day in and day out. And I want people to know that this is my number one and my number two. I deal with depression. And I deal with recovery. And I know that if we can come together, we can save a life. If I can save one life, I did my job. And I'm happy to say I've saved a lot of lives, and I'm going to continue to save a lot of lives. I'm extremely proud to say I'm John Cain. I'm an elected senator in Pennsylvania. But before all that, I'm an alcoholic, and I'll never forget that.
Your work is meaningful and profound in our area. The people I know, our recovery community, it doesn't go unnoticed. It actually is helping tremendous amounts of people, and myself is included in that. I didn't notice you until I got back from a relapse about 4 years ago, I said, who the hell is this guy? Holy God, what a breath of fresh air. It's like, I did want to talk a little bit about your first campaign and running and the anxieties, stresses, and the guts it takes to run, but not only run as a person in recovery, which we know historically 25, 30 years ago could have been a point of attacking you. How did you deal, confront, and plan for that? Now that you entered politics, when you entered politics, what were the people around you saying?
That's a good question, Joe. I was surprised, and it was kind of taken back. I ran in 2014, and I got my ass handed to me, Joe. And it was all the stuff that came out before 1983 that really took me down. And it was uncalled for, but unfortunately, I found out through that campaign, and it was like the bad news bears against the Yankees, man. I was on an uphill battle. We were down, I think when we started the race, we were down in the teens. I want to say probably about 15 points. We lost by 4 points.
Wow, that's a climb.
So we lost, but that's all right. It was a hell of a climb. But I ended up, I was asked to consider running. But they didn't know all the negativity about John Cain. I think if they would have known, they probably would have looked for another candidate. But what I think, what ended up happening, and this is part of my district in Delaware County, where I don't live there anymore, but I still have part of Delaware County in my district. And I'm a Delco guy. I'll never change it, but I live in Chester County now. I like to joke and tell everybody they kicked me out and they sent me to Chester County. But what ended up happening after that race, a lot of people realized, you know, I was willing to take them blows for my party. And I ran a race like they had never seen before. And we raised more money than they've ever seen before in the county. And they never turned my back. And we could say the smartest of the smartest that are out there, way smarter than me. You know, the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers, and then you had the blue collar. You know, we all came together to help this guy. And that, you know, it was, even though I lost that race and it hurt and it almost destroyed my marriage. I mean, there was parts of my background that my wife even said, if any of this comes out, I'm leaving. And I told her, and I promised her, there's no way they would ever go down that road. And they did. And, things my kids didn't even know about. Now find out. My neighbors, you know, I was involved in the CYO program in my neck of the woods, and they're all looking at me like, holy shit. You know, but that being said, there were people in the community that I never, you know, the professors, the lawyers, you know, that I never even knew before.
Yeah.
They embraced John Cain. They loved my story. They loved the fact that, you know what? I'm a guy that was able to bring the party together from people that were blue collar to, you know, the most wealthiest of people. And even when I got my ass beat, I was diagnosed with cancer right after that. That's why I'm the size I am now, you know, from a 225, 230 guy down to 160 pounds now. They embraced the fact that I showed up with cancer and a tube running down my nose, you know. You know, they all lied to me. They all told me how great I looked. I looked like shit. I looked like hell. And I survived it. It wasn't easy, you know, and that was all for the grace of God. I wasn't ready. And I showed up and everybody appreciated. I didn't care if I was in Philadelphia, Bucks County, Montgomery County, Berks County, Lehigh County, Delaware County, Chester County. I showed up at every event that I could possibly show up. to let people know, yeah, I might have got my ass beat, but I didn't lose. I'm a winner. I've always felt as though that when you get knocked down, you get the hell back up. And I did. I'm sorry, Joe. I get emotional. I moved. My daughter graduated high school. My wife and I have been looking. We decided to move out to Chester County after I ended up, you know, I had the cancer and things were 5 years behind. And, you know, my wife and I were getting along great. And when I moved out to Chester County, I found out through a personal friend that I live in a Republican district and would I consider running again. And I was like, man, I don't know. And they're like, we got nobody. Would you want to do it? And my wife knew as much as the poor woman had gone through. She knew I didn't like that loss. And she knew I still had one good fight left in me. And I'm, you know, cancer was probably at that time was probably 6 years behind me. And I asked her, would you allow me to run again? And she's like, yeah. Once I got the approval, man, I laced them up. I went to my members at my union and they approved it. And, you know, the deal was if I won, then I would retire immediately. We won. I retired immediately. I never thought that I was going to win from time one because I already knew what a loss looked like. You know, I was up on another uphill battle, but I knew I had one fight left in me. And I always said the only fight, you know, I ever won was the fight with cancer. But, you know, Chester County, they loved me because they knew who I was. You know, I was very supportive of all the candidates in Chester County in the past. They love me. I love them. I love my Delco people. So, you know, I'm happy to advocate for people out there. There are people that don't like my story because I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic. You know, they kind of like, you know, there's some nationalities out there that's like, oh, he's got a problem. He's got it. You know, it's like, yeah. No, I face that problem, man. I'm in recovery. And I always tell people, you know, people like yourself that, you know, relapse. I'm only one drink away. That can happen at any time. Do I ever think of drinking? Absolutely. I'd lie to you today if I didn't. But I know one day at a time I can do this. And I know I look at people. I look at my close friends that have passed, that have died because of their addiction, or who had died that were in recovery. I think of them often when I have those weak moments. People say, you know, what would Jesus do? I have a friend, what would Joe do? He was my my closest friend, the guy that used to hang on the corner, that used to get me my beer, the old timer, who ended up being my best friend, who died of cancer. And I know when I have those weak moments, I lean on him. And I know him, even though he's not here, I can feel his laugh. I can feel him breaking my balls, telling me to get up. Things are going to be okay. And he's right. They will be okay. And
yeah.
I love being sober. I honestly
like the idea. Catholics always had the idea of the saints or influences of souls that have passed on. And, you know, I'm not too Catholic these days, but I was raised Catholic. To have a memory of a friend that's that's that close and touching. I think all of us get to, a lot of people in AA get to experience that, not only with childhood friends, but people that we meet in the rooms or in recovery communities. People don't die if you're alive. If they live as a memory, a voice, I could hear those people in my head. And that's something real. I'm not talking about the spirit world. I'm just the actuality that it's happening in my head is beautiful. And along those lines, I wanted to, A, your agenda and your advocacy has not only helped understand and reduce the stigma to access to treatment, other programs that could have been provocative to either you or I, even when we entered recovery, that helped save lives. Some forms of recovery don't look the same as others, and some are just measures to save people's lives. I see you fighting for that every day. I see it in the presence of social media. I see it from your colleagues and my friends in Harrisburg of the passion. And it takes a person. What you just described sums up one word to me. It's grit. And grit is this resiliency that failure isn't the end of something. It's this distraction to a mission, not even a goal. You're driven by a mission. With all that exertion, recovering from cancer, what are the rituals you keep for self-care for John that nourish the marriage, your mental health, that keep you in the fight? Because not many people are built to fight the way you fight for recovery communities in Harrisburg. What do you do to care for yourself?
Another good question. Well, I spend every morning, I spend a moment in prayer, more like meditation. And I'm grateful for what I have. And I guess through social media, I send prayers out to people that are in need of prayer. I also like, and Joe, this is probably one of the greatest feelings that I get when I'm feeling down. And after I give my story, it's like, it's a lot of pressure. And I kind of like, you know, it just brings back so much. I'll call a friend, somebody I haven't talked to. And, whether they take the call or they don't. And I got a lot of friends out there, and it breaks my heart that, you know, I haven't talked to in a long time. And when I do reach out to them, they don't return the call. And I could be like that. I could be that person and just say, you know what? I'm not going to call them again. I'm done with them. But I'm the other way. I think the other way, and I reach out to them. Or I may reach out to a person that I know that's not doing well, maybe sick, just to talk to them, because they may not be getting a phone call all day long, or a senior citizen, or I love doing that. That makes me feel very good. I also am a huge proponent on giving. You know, I learned at an early age, the greatest gift is the gift of giving. And I might see a street person, I might give them a couple bucks. I know what they may be using that money for, but it makes me feel good because, you know, for the grace of God, there go I. And I think of my friend Joe that used to be on a corner hanging, waiting, you know, begging for money and stuff like that. So it reminds me that I've had a friend that was like that. It could be me. It could be a family member. That's somebody's child. Nobody ever wanted to grow up to be a drug addict or drunk. And I always think that with me, if I get that moment of clarity in the morning, and I don't miss it, you know, if I get an opportunity to help somebody out, Joe, before I get off this program, I am more than happy to give my cell phone out. So you let me know when you want me to do it, because I'll be glad to do it. Because I'll tell you this, I've gotten calls. I've gotten a phone call where a kid not far from here called me up and heard my message and got the phone number And he said, I'm not doing good, and this and that, with his family and his kids. And I took him to an AA meeting that afternoon. I'm telling you, if I can do that for somebody, I'll do it. I'm in a position where I can walk away from a meeting and just say, hey, listen, I got to go. Or I could cancel a meeting. It's a top priority for this guy. I don't have a problem. No, will I travel to Florida? No, I'm not going to do that. But I'll be happy to talk to you on the phone and get you some help. And I'll follow up on it. And I'll give you my cell phone. You can call me anytime. That makes me feel good. Because I can't get to AA meetings like I used to anymore. And I'm sure it's happy as hell to talk to somebody in addiction and somebody that's hurting.
Wow. That is amazing. I'm not going to let you be late for a parade, but I do have one other idea I wanted to explore because I think it's at the heart of a lot of us with the next upcoming year is partisanship. The polarization of the two parties now, well beyond Pennsylvania or Harrisburg, just this anger and this anger and this almost not a delusion, the illusion that we're so different. Because I just told you I'm a Democrat or you just told me you're a Republican. And I'm not trying to equivocate like any kind of moral standards between the two parties. I don't want to step in that. What I wanted to say is you have a platform that is about human dignity, social work, the dignity of labor. How do you stay above the fray to get the greater good done? And are you meeting people across the aisle that are like, John, I get it. I get what you're doing. Who cares? There is no ideology here. We're going to save people. How are you coming across that? How do you meet that nonpartisanship?
I got to say, a lot of people, I can have a conversation like you just said, you know, party differences. When you're sitting there talking one-on-one with somebody, we get along. It's just that when you get the groups together, I don't get along with some of the people on my side of the aisle. I scratch my head thinking like, what are you thinking about? And then I look at some people on the other side of the aisle and I think the same thing. But when I have the one-on-one conversations, they're awesome conversations. People want to hear my story. You know, they want to know a little bit about some of the people that I've met in my life that got me into recovery, or, you know, would you recommend, you know, do I believe in like methadone for people that are heroin addicts, and do I believe that, you know, short-term care versus long-term? I said, I'm old school, man. Long-term care for me is the only thing that works, but I'm old school. We talk about these, you know, these recovery homes. I lived with three other guys back when I got in recovery. It was the greatest house. Little did I know we'd probably be billionaires if we knew what the hell we were doing. But to us, it was awesome. Yeah. And really, they do work, man. I'm telling you, they do work. I worry about some of them that are out there. They might not have any oversight, but we were oversight. We watched out for each other. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. But when I talk to people on the other side of the aisle, and I know there's so much hatred out there, I said, but we also know at times we come together. When we saw what happened on 9/11, this country loved each other. There was no hate. We all believed we were all American. We all loved our flag. We all loved each other. We were attacked. And I believe there's certain moments in this state that I see that we can come together. You know, even if you're a Steelers fan and I'm an Eagles fan, go Birds. When the Phillies were doing so well, the people out in Pittsburgh, they were rooting for the Phillies. It's, you know, it didn't matter what party you were. We all loved the Phillies at that time. And I'm sure everybody's going to love the Eagles when we're back in the Super Bowl again this year. But there's moments of clarity. And I try to tell them, change your station. I mean, my family, they're all Republican. and their job. What happened? You know, what's this? I was like, stop, hit the pause button. You know, don't change the station. And I'm the same way. I look at my party like, yeah, we're the greatest. And sometimes I think, all right, maybe you are right. I love opinionated people. And I always say, because I ran a union, and I used to hear it all the time, you know, we should do this, we should do that. I get it. I respect opinionated people, but I don't have to agree with them. But I will say, from time to time, they're not wrong. You know, and I always look at it, so you know what? That was a great opinion. I like what he had to say, and I will consider it. And I do sometimes consider it. And sometimes I think, as a whole, we should be like that. Be open-minded. I look in that Senate chamber. I look throughout the entire Senate chamber. 75% of them people in that Senate chamber are lawyers. Extremely smart people. There's only one master plumber in that room, and that's me. You know? So they might be smart on one end, but they don't have what I got. I have knowledge of being a blue-collar street person. I'm a hell of a plumber. I'll challenge anybody when it comes to plumbing.
And we wind down to close to get you to a parade. I want to summarize a few things, just so it's clear to anyone listening. Your advocacy in the last few years in Pennsylvania specifically has produced and advocated and promoted some really special things happened in our state. One of them was the designation we were talking earlier of the recovery house. Now, what this did is allow our state to give you a designation. With this designation, you could get funding up to 3 months, 6 months for a person to live in a sober environment that now has standards, dignity, is really well run. We're one of the first states to really do that effectively through DDAP. And I've seen that part of you. I've been on panels listening in of your advocation for that. Other things is the access to MAT programs that saves lives. It might not be the total abstinence recovery win, but dead people don't get sober. And I've heard you speak and understand this and ask the most poignant questions on these panels and, you know, work sessions, and it was moving. And I'm really proud to have you on to promote what you're doing. I think all of our recovery community should know that they have a friend in Harrisburg who's about to give out his cell phone number to help another alcoholic. It's amazing.
Joe, I'm very fortunate. And like I say, if I'm doing my job, I get reelected. Yeah. If I didn't do my job, then I won't. And, you know, I'm getting up on my election year. And I know I did, like I tried to tell the people in my district, if I can leave my district a little bit better than the way I found it, I achieved my goal. And I've advocated for people in recovery, and I will continue to advocate for people in recovery. Mm-hmm. To the day I die. Save this kid's life. So, and there's other people on both sides of the aisle that are in recovery. Sure. Some aren't as open about the recovery than I am. But to me, it's an emotional story. It's my story. I own it. And I want to share it. With that, my cell phone, 215-764-9114. I may not answer your call because I don't recognize your number, but I will tell you, if you leave a message or shoot me a text, I will call you back and get in touch.
Beautiful. Senator, I'll stay in touch, and anything you ever need, I'm always here, whatever I could do.
And thank you, Joe. It's really nice meeting you. Thanks for putting this parade together, and thank you for what you're doing. I don't know about that. All right, I'll see you.
I'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of All Better. You can find us on allbetter.fm or listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Alexa. Special thanks to our producer, John Edwards, and engineering company 570 Drone. please like or subscribe to us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And if you're not on social media, you're awesome. Looking forward to seeing you again. And remember, just because you're sober doesn't mean you're right.
Hi, this is Joe Van Wee, your host of All Better. I had a few announcements. If you're interested in subscriber content, which we're about to launch, this would be STEP workshops, cognitive behavioral therapy tools, and mindfulness practices that are approachable and can be very useful in reducing anxiety, rumination, and depression. Please send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And if you like the episodes that you've been hearing very much, please stop by Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and a small review. This helps us stay relevant in the field of content and helping people and their families with substance use disorder. Thank you.